And welcome back to the Fun Time program. I am your host, John Andrew Fredrickson, here with my beautiful co-host,
Vivica Volt.
And today we have an exciting guest on the Zoom. It is Lacey Delane, the former advanced team lead for the Andrew Yang 2020 presidential campaign and host of the Rethinking Humanity podcast. Lacey, how are you doing today?
Awesome, John. Thank you so much for having me, guys. This is fun. I love your show, so it's cool to be here.
It is such a pleasure, and we are fans of your show as well. I have been a Yang ganger since the very beginning of Andrew Yang's presidential campaign when he went on the Sam Harris podcast. I've been a big fan of Sam Harris for about a decade. So when Andrew came on there and talked about UBI, I was just like, what is going on here? This is so crazy, so out there. But then you start to dig into it and it starts to make sense. And it's just been such a fantastic journey to watch his campaign and to watch the excitement that he has built up around the country for these ideas, to the point where now we're talking about cash payments for Americans in the middle of a pandemic, when a year ago Andrew was on the debate stage talking about giving $1,000 a month to every American. And what was the reaction that he got from Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren and the other Democratic candidates for running for camp? Do you remember that moment? Yeah. They were laughing at him. And now look where we are, literally, just a year later. Like, how bizarre has that been for you to experience that transformation over the course of this year?
Oh my gosh, it's amazing. I mean, it just gives me chills to think about it. Like, we were working so hard early on to get these ideas out. And it just really speaks to what a motivated group of individuals can accomplish. Right. I mean, I think, you know, the universe, or whatever you want to call it, circumstances, I like to call it, has helped us, you know. And I'm not saying I'm glad about the pandemic, because I'm not.
Right.
But the circumstances around the pandemic have pushed this forward in a way that I think, you know, our advocacy and then the timing of the pandemic are just hand in hand, just perfect. And so it's so hard to believe that, you know, a year and a half ago, we were like, people were literally laughing at us. Yeah. And now they're writing, right, they're writing bills,
yes,
that are taking into account these ideas.
And not just that, but we have a special election happening in Georgia right now, which is going to decide the fate of the Senate, which is going to mean, you know, are the Democrats going to be able to get any legislation passed over the next 4 years or 2 years, let's say, in the Biden administration. And we're talking about this $2,000 cash payment that Trump has pushed for, of all people, has now become almost a wedge issue that you have the two Republican candidates for Senate in Georgia publicly backing $2,000 cash payments to American citizens. Like, what?
A year later.
Not even just the Democratic Party has switched, but we've even got Republicans on board with this. Like, how does this happen?
It's amazing. I know. I mean, what a great timing for us to do the show. Honestly.
Right.
Because, oh, absolutely.
I mean, obviously, I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia. I grew up in Georgia, in the suburbs of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I've spent most of my life here. And I do have a cool story of, like, I used to be very conservative.
Okay.
And I am not anymore. So that's kind of cool, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, my goodness, like, here we are. And the two Republican senators from Georgia are finally, let's do it. Now, I tweeted about this earlier, but, like, I think it's political, but who gives a shit? Like,
right.
That is beyond and beside the point.
Right.
We are doing something that we're miles behind other developed nations,
mm-hmm,
when it comes to taking care of our people in the middle of a global pandemic that has shut down so many businesses.
Absolutely.
So I on the one hand, I'm like, that's disgusting. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm so thankful and I'm so excited and I'm so shocked and happy, you know, that this is where we're sitting right now.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I definitely want to jump into, like, your history with UBI and with Andrew Yang campaign and all that, because it's so interesting for me to hear how, you know, other people kind of came to this movement. But let's talk about Georgia for a minute. You know, you guys are in the middle of this special election runoff. What is it like down there right now?
You know what? It's really amazing. I'm so honored and happy and thankful that there are so many people who have decided to come here from out of state, Yang mm-hmm. Gang folks, and then people who are here in state who are just super motivated. I myself have taken a bit of a little break from being super active in politics mm-hmm. because I just went so hard for so long. So I'm like, you know what? I'm thankful that I can do that. There's other folks who are like fired up. And I think that's kind of like the rhythm of the universe or the rhythm of how things work. But there's been an amazing outpouring of support here for John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock. And so I'm so glad that, you know, that's happening. I know there's a group of folks that I was speaking with earlier today who they're here with a nonprofit, and they have knocked on, I think she told me it was 70,000 doors.
Wow.
So far since they've been here. And that's since like early November or mid November, I think. Wow. Shortly after that, you know, we found out the runoff, you know, they've been here. So that's amazing. And then, about a month ago, this person had reported some information of like, they had knocked on 25,000 doors and 70% of the people that they spoke with were in favor of voting for Ossoff and Warnock. So that's awesome.
So cool. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And is this separate from Andrew Yang's efforts with, you know, the Yang Gang and Humanity Forward?
Yes.
Okay. What presence have you mm-hmm. seen with the Yang Gang specifically with, you know, Andrew Yang and the Humanity Forward campaign or movement?
Yeah, sure. So Andrew and family were here for about a month and a half. They left like 17th or 18th of December.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's several events that Andrew did while he was here, you know, canvassing kickoffs. He mm-hmm. did some canvassing himself. And then there was a AAPI event that he did with Warnock. So that mm-hmm. was really cool. The Atlanta Yang Gang which is a group that I kind of started back in March of 2019, is still a thing. And now they've become the Humanity Forward Georgia.
Right.
And so those folks have done a lot of canvassing as well. A lot of folks are teaming up with the Ossoff campaign, the Warnock campaign, mm-hmm. To kind of, you know, join in their efforts. But apart from that, Humanity Forward Georgia has done events on the Beltline, which is a walking path that goes through the city, just telling people to vote. Mm-hmm. And they've also done canvassing along with the Ossoff campaign and the Warnock campaign. So they've been busy. And I'm just so glad and so proud of everything that's happening here. It's just so crazy that the universe of politics is like right here, right now.
Right. Yeah. Right. And how are you feeling about the upcoming election? I guess people have already been voting, right? There's been early voting. It sounds like we're having record turnout. What is the feeling on the ground? Are people feeling optimistic?
Yeah, I think we do. I mean, for us this year, this presidential election was a big deal because we flipped the state blue,
right?
As we all know.
Yay! Which is incredible.
I mean, that's a huge deal.
Yeah. In no small part to Stacey Abrams and her wonderful crew of Black women.
What is her organization called again? Fair Fight?
I think it's like either Fair Fight or Fair Vote.
Something like that. Do you know
Stacey? I think it's Fair Fight.
Yeah.
Fair Fight Action. Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Have you bumped into her work at all?
No, I haven't. I know they're doing a lot. I have not bumped into her or her work. But I do know that they're doing a lot to, you know, get folks out to the polls.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, one of the things that is super, super like impressive to me is really just the coalition of mm-hmm. folks who are here that are just working hard to really bring people to the polls and just like get the word out about the election. Mm-hmm. I think that's big. That's one of the biggest things is like runoffs.
Right.
Generally Republicans tend to show up more.
Yes. Right.
And people just get lazy and they're like, I don't want to go vote in a runoff.
Right.
But that's not the case this time. There's no way you can go through the city of Atlanta and not see a sign about this election.
Okay.
Like it's everywhere.
Well, that's good to hear.
Everywhere. So
that's exciting.
Yeah. So your question for how I'm feeling about it, I'll tell you that I'm feeling similarly to how I felt during the primary for the presidential.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry. Not the primary, the general.
The general.
Which was
in November.
Yes. Which was like, I just had a really good feeling that Biden was going to win.
Really? In
and
Georgia?
So that's yes.
Wow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. So,
well, I mean, you weren't wrong.
I wasn't. Yay! Yes. So that's kind of where I'm at this time. I really feel good that that this is going to turn out well for the Democrats, and both seats will flip. It'll be a big deal, but I really do feel
that's
going to
be
it.
The hugest deal. Oh, if we can flip the Senate.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, that would make such a difference for policy going forward. I mean, even just this pandemic with the COVID relief bill that we've been struggling with since frickin' August.
Because the only person blocking it at this point wouldn't be the Senate Majority Leader
anymore.
It's
been unbelievable to watch. I mean, here's another example. The House, Trump says he's going to veto the bill for 2,000. He wants 2,000. 600 isn't enough. He eventually signs it, but then the House goes and passes another version of the bill. It says, hey, we're willing to do this 2,000. They even get Republicans to vote for it in the House. And then they pass it to the Senate and it gets blocked again.
McConnell won't even
bring it to the floor.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, senators like the two Republican senators from Georgia even publicly saying that they will vote for this. So, you know, I think that people are recognizing how important it is to vote for Democrats to have a change of pace in this country, you know, because McConnell has just been blocking things right and left. And if we're going to actually get anything done in a Biden administration and actually be able to pass further COVID relief, you know, the Restaurants Act, I don't know what the situation is with restaurants in Atlanta, but in New York City, we are losing all of our favorite restaurants. They are all going under. And
not just our favorites. We're just losing restaurants.
Everything.
We're losing the bar and restaurant.
And there has been
entirely.
No support. And so the House has been trying to pass this Restaurants Act, and they won't even see it in the Senate. You know, so if we're going to be able to do anything in this Biden administration going forward, it almost relies on this election coming up. So it's so exciting to hear that people are taking it seriously, that amazing people are on the ground really pushing that message and hammering it home. So I'm feeling good about it.
Yeah,
I know it feels
That's
like
exciting.
A long shot a little bit, but fingers crossed.
Yeah.
In some ways it feels like a long shot, but I also think people are ready for something different. And it has been a hellacious year.
Yeah.
And it's just, to me, I mean, I've said this about basic income since I learned about it, but I just don't understand what's the problem with giving people money? Like, how does that hurt?
Right.
What are they going to do with it? They're going to burn it. They're going to bury it in the ground. They're going to spend it. It's going to stimulate the economy.
Yes.
Even if they spend it on stuff that they shouldn't spend it on.
Right.
Right.
Which, who gets to say that?
Right.
But even if they do, they're still stimulating the economy.
Right.
So who cares?
My favorite take on this was, I don't know if this came from Yang or somebody else. Maybe it came from Scott Santons. I'm sure you're familiar with his work. He's like the OG godfather of pushing for UBI. And he does a ton of incredible writing on the topic. You know, he's always on Twitter responding to everybody whenever they're talking about UBI. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the thing that really kind of changed my frame of reference for thinking about this is thinking about dollars in a local economy as votes. When people have dollars in their pocket, they use those dollars to vote on the goods and services in their community that have value to them. And therefore, the companies that get created locally that are providing a valuable service to the community get elevated to the top. If you don't have money in people's pockets, they simply don't have votes. And so they aren't able to vote on the local businesses. You know, it's like in Africa, for example, they did a UBI, was it the Nigeria program, where essentially, you know, rather than just giving money to somebody to start a business, which has been the long-standing way of like supporting, you know, local economies, it's like, let's give somebody a loan so they can start a business, start a bakery. But if nobody in that community has money to spend at that bakery, it's going to fail.
Yep.
Give money to people. And then let them start businesses that they think are going to do well, and then get people a chance to vote on those businesses. That's all it is. It's votes. You're giving people votes in their local economy. Mm-hmm. And it's so amazing how it can go from being this outlandish, insane idea to the more you study it, the more just like obvious.
This seems so common sense.
What a weird, you know, place to go from. I'd love to hear more about your story, though. Tell us how you first heard about universal basic income, and how did you get, you know, involved in this?
Sure. Well, before I jump to that, I will say this, that I think what I was thinking when you were talking just now is like, I think this goes back to how little we empower and trust individuals.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm learning that in my life right now, as I'm a nanny part-time right now. And my background is working with kids. And so it's fun to just, I'm learning how to use more Montessori type methods in working with kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's a very student-centered approach. And so anyway, my point is it's helping me to see how non person centered we are. We're like, let's just control people and let's just tell them what to do. And that, I think this hesitancy to like give people money is another manifestation of that. Like, hello, who knows better what you need other than you? You know best, you know?
I think it's frustrating that like one of the biggest pushbacks that I've seen against UBI is that, well, you know, now that like if now that we've seen that if you give people money, they're not going to work. And it's like, well, just because they're not contributing to capitalism directly by like giving their like low wage labor doesn't mean they're not going to work. I mean, obviously in a pandemic, our industry blew up, but instead we just decided to create. And I think that will give people more of an opportunity to create something that has value to them and will then translate to value to the community at large.
Exactly. And then people in the community will have money in their pockets to vote on those things.
Absolutely.
You know? So it starts to feel like such a no-brainer after you really research it. But tell us more about how you first, you know, discovered UBI and started, you know, doing your research on that.
Yeah. So this is such a fun story. So I dated a guy who was here on an H-1B visa. And like March of 2018, I think, is when we started dating. And some law changes under the Trump administration made it to where they delayed the processing renewal of H-1B visas. And so he ended up having to leave the country in August instead of his visa being automatically renewed. So we were, I don't know, 6 months into our relationship, which is not long enough to really know whether something's going to work or not. You know, it's like we're on the cusp of getting to that point. And he had to leave. And that was just really hard. But he also really introduced me to really paying attention to politics and Bernie Sanders. And I just really wasn't politically aware or active before that. And I was like, wow, hey, somebody's like cares about people, Bernie Sanders. Wow, this is great. I hope he runs for president. So then November of that year, actually was watching the Young Turks and saw Andrew on for the first time. And I was like, whoa.
What year was this again?
This is 2018.
Okay.
2018.
Got you.
Yeah. So Andrew's on the Young Turks talking about basic income. And I was like, that is so progressive. But I was really like Bernie goggles, you know, like I just want Bernie to announce. And so then January, at that point, I followed Andrew on Twitter. That's what happened after that interview. And then, of course, Joe Rogan happens. And I'm like, wow, this is like people are saying so much about it, I got to watch it. And so I watched the interview and I ended up, because it was such a long interview, I ended up, you know, watching it separately, like half at one time and then the second half another time. And if it wasn't for the watching it the second half, I don't know if I would be where I am today, because I think the body of information that he presented in that interview really convinced me that he was a better candidate than Bernie.
Wow.
Because he really could see these issues in a different way. And also he had solutions for them. And so, cause at first I thought, okay, basic income is a great idea. Why don't we just like let Bernie do the basic income thing?
Right.
And then he started talking about why the minimum wage isn't the best idea. Just raising the minimum wage isn't the best idea. And his other ideas. And I was like, okay, this guy gets it. So I said, I'm pretty sure this guy's going to be my candidate. But I knew he had written a book. So I was like, let me get his book before I fully convert. And let me read the book. So this is February of 2019. I get his book. I actually listened to it on audio. And he reads it. If you have not listened to The War on Normal People or read it, I say I think you would greatly enjoy it, greatly benefit from it. But I listened to it on audio and it's him reading it. Which is even cooler. And the, I mean, it's just convincing. Have you guys read that book?
I picked it up as soon as I heard his interview on Sam Harris, which is actually a full year before. This is in like the spring of 2018. So I picked that up right away. I actually just ordered two more copies for the studio because I can't find my physical copy. I read it on my iPad, but we're going to have two copies here in the studio very shortly. Have you had a chance to check it out?
I have not. So I guess we're going to book club it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's a must read. And it's unbelievable how in depth he goes, you know, and answers all these questions, because immediately everybody's going to have such obvious questions. You know, what about inflation? What about all these other issues? And he has just thought this through so well. And Joe, actually, normally I get annoyed with Joe Rogan, because I feel like he doesn't drill his guests enough. He actually did a really great job in this interview asking the important questions and be like, wait, this doesn't make sense because of this. This doesn't make sense because of that. And it gave Andrew an opportunity to really discuss these issues and show people how he's thought it through, which is the most convincing thing you can be. If people don't question your ideas, they're left with the questions in their head. So a good interview is somebody who really, you know, questions every aspect of it and gives somebody like Andrew a chance to really answer those questions. And he, I mean, what a phenomenal job he's done through that campaign.
Amazing. Amazing. It's like, that was obviously a defining moment in the campaign. Yeah. And, you know, it's Andrew is the kind of person, it seems, that he has very thick skin. And I think he also knew if he was going to run for president on this, he had to have his shit together. Yeah, like, I don't think it's that great. I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are. You know what I mean?
Like, right. Yeah, he had to have the numbers like very solid.
That was one of my favorite quotes from the whole campaign, was when Elizabeth Warren says, well, I don't know. I don't have the numbers in front of me. And he goes, I have the numbers. Here's my book.
Yes.
And she read it. Exactly. And she read it. I mean, credit to her. Like,
yes. Amazing. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's definitely a must read. But the last chapter is just particularly moving. Mm-hmm. In that he says, I need you to see what I see, you know, and he kind of like has this moving invitation, to everyone to see the facts and know that we've got to do something.
Right.
And I was like, holy shit, this guy is brilliant and this makes sense. And I'm totally on board. And a lot of what he says in the book and a lot of what his platform really promotes overlaps with Eric Fromm and his philosophy and his approach, which is really the basis for the content of my podcast.
Okay.
So that was also another reason why I was like, holy shit, Andrew Yang, he's like, just this is Fromm. It's just the modern day, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was another reason why I got so passionate. But at that point, I was like, this guy's probably been laughed at a million times saying I'm running for president.
Right.
I'm like, he's been embarrassed. Well, I don't care. I'll be embarrassed a little bit. I just want to get this guy's name out there.
Yeah, right.
And I just, for whatever reason, I just wanted to go hold up some signs at the corner of Freedom Parkway and Boulevard right here in Atlanta.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And just so like people would just maybe Google him.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so the campaign reached out to me after I signed up on the website to be like a volunteer. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, I want to hold up some signs. And they were like, okay, well, let me get you to Carly. I think Carly, you know, would enjoy hearing from you and like hearing about this. Mm-hmm. Carly Riley, who I think you guys probably know who she is, but she was like the deputy chief of staff at that point.
Right.
And I mean, at this point, y'all, there's like two or three people on staff.
Totally. Right.
Like there's nobody.
Right.
Zach later told me that they were like this close to ending the campaign before Joe Rogan. Like
really?
It was just like, yes.
Wow.
Yes. So
Zach being so anyways, the, Zach was the campaign manager, right? Zach Grauman. Did I get his last name
Zach,
right?
That's correct. Yes. Yeah. Zach Grauman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I talked to Carly and she said, hey, this is great. We really appreciate it. Send us pictures, tweet it, whatever, whatever. I'm like, okay, cool. And I didn't think anything about it. I'm just like, I don't give a shit. I just want people to find out who Andrew Yang is,
right.
You know? So anyways, we do that. I got a couple people from here in Atlanta to go with me. There was three of us. Took pictures, tweeted. Andrew retweeted, responded to my tweet. Was like, hey, thank you so much. We're going to come to Atlanta soon. And I was like, holy shit. I was not expecting that, you know? yeah. So it was amazing. And then shortly after that, I mean, I stayed in touch with Carly. And then in April, I helped plan the rally here for Andrew at Piedmont Park. Nice. And so like, it's just from there on, it really is history. Like after that, I continued to lead the Atlanta Yang Gang through the summer. We did a lot of fun, like get the word out events. And then October, I reached out to Zach and I was like, hey, I really would like to do this. Like with all of my time, I would like to be spending on this.
Right.
And if you guys see a fit for me on the campaign, I'd love to be a part. And that's kind of how I went from, you know, a person who read his book to someone who worked, you know, pretty closely with him during the campaign.
That's amazing.
That's such a great story.
It's funny thinking back to the campaign, because it obviously never seemed like he really had a real chance to win. But there was something about his spirit and his dedication to these issues, and then recognizing how right he was and how important these issues were, that I think encouraged people to get involved with the campaign just to get these issues seen and heard and get them put into the forefront, even though he was a long shot candidate. And that's what enabled people like you, people like me, to get so excited about the campaign and say, I'm going to actually dedicate my time to this, and I'm going to start telling other people about this. Even if he never wins the presidency, it's so important just to get people to hear him talk about this kind of stuff. And he's impressed me so much with how he's transitioned then from running his presidential campaign with the explicit purpose of getting people to hear about these issues, and then turning all of that support that he got and all that attention that he got into a new organization going forward. And he's calling that organization Humanity Forward. What has it been like on your end to make that transition from, you know, working with the campaign during, you know, the presidential election, to then switching to, you know, sort of more forward thinking, how can we continue the excitement around these ideas and continue to inspire more people around the country to promote these ideas and get more influence in Congress? What has that been like to make that transition?
Well, I think for a lot of Yang Gang, the transition at first was shocking and unexpected, because it just happened so much faster and so much sooner than we expected.
Okay.
And so it was like, you know, I've described it like this before. It felt like we were on this roller coaster, and we were having so much fun, and we were like just going up this hill and, you know, going up, you know, up and down. And then we go to the biggest hill and you get so excited. And it's like, yes. And then we went down, and instead of continuing, we just crashed into the ground,
right?
You know? And so it was a very hard letdown.
Yeah.
For Yang Gang, obviously for myself. Mm-hmm. So that part was really difficult. And I actually think I had COVID in late January.
Oh.
I got sick at the end of the campaign.
Okay.
And so while we were in like part of the time in Iowa and then part of the time in New Hampshire at the end, just before the end of the campaign, I was not even doing anything. I was alone in a hotel room because I was sick.
So oh, no.
That was really hard. But I think once we got through that initial like pain and loss, I think it's been a lot easier for us to see, you know, how we can continue the impact and how, you know, as much as it sucked that we didn't make it further, we're still, you know, we're still really winning,
right?
You know, like the fact that we're here today, what is this, December 29th,
right.
December 30th, and two Republican senators just said, yes, give people $2,000.
Right.
Which is insane.
I mean, it's not ongoing yet, but we're getting there, you know,
right.
Step by step.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's been a interesting transition. I think if Andrew runs for mayor, I think it'll help folks to have a solid place to put their energy again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think it will, you know, help us. But I think there's also been some folks who have kind of fallen off the wagon a little bit or been discouraged.
Mm-hmm.
And just us doing Humanity Forward stuff hasn't been enough to kind of re-engage them.
Interesting.
And so I think, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I also know a lot of people worked really hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many people who put so much heart into this. And, you know, a break is, you know, that's a healthy thing.
For
taking
sure.
some space and time
Definitely
to rest.
Needed.
That's a healthy thing.
For sure.
And so I think that's okay. And I hope that people are taking care of themselves, because that's a huge part of having a happy, healthy life.
Amen.
Yeah, especially this year.
Oh my God. Yeah. Right.
Oh my God.
Taking like an extra break and like letting yourself just not be productive, even when you're like, well, I've been home for the last like 2 months, but I am totally going to be fine with not having a productive day today.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've all learned collectively that mental health is so important, and it's something that we take for granted, you know, when you're kind of hustling and doing your everyday thing, and you always have that next thing in front of you. But then when you get a chance to take a longer break like this, you recognize, you know, how much we need to put work and effort into that as well. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's important for everybody that was involved in the campaign. Andrew, of course, has continued his efforts by transitioning to the Humanity Forward campaign, but also he started a podcast. Was it around April that he started his podcast as well? Right around the same time.
Yeah, you're right. It is. That's so true.
You had the same thought. Tell us about that. What was your inspiration for starting a podcast? You called it the Rethinking Humanity Podcast, which I love, because that is what this campaign has been about. It's like, you know, these ideas are out there, but they're a little radical. Mm-hmm. They're really different from the way we've thought about it before. Mm-hmm. We really need to rethink our relationship to, you know, humanity's place in the economy. And that title is just so excellent. What was it like getting started with that for you?
Yeah, thanks. I had an idea to start a podcast before I went on the campaign trail. I have a friend, Sonia, who I do the podcast with, that I met through a philosophy meetup group here in Atlanta, actually. And, you know, she and I really like to talk about the themes that we talk about on the podcast. And that's just naturally what we would do. And one day I jokingly said, like, Sonia, we need to start a podcast, you know, I'm like, just kidding. And you know, we didn't think about it again and, you know, doing campaign stuff, whatever. And then there's a guy who is a part of the Atlanta Yang Gang who also works in film. It's Victor. He's the guy that's doing all of our production stuff.
Right. Nice.
And he is the one, it's his fault, really, because he's like, Lacey, you need to start a podcast. And I was like, So he said, I tricked you into it. He was like, because I knew that you have a voice and you needed an outlet. And after the campaign was over, you really like, what was your outlet anymore?
Mm-hmm, right.
And he's like, so he said, I started a podcast just to trick you, have you on as a guest, because I thought if you got exposed to it a little bit, you would like it.
Nice.
And then he invited me to be like a co-host. Nice. I mean, he did like 5 episodes. Okay. And he's like, I knew that if I did that, then maybe I could get you to start a podcast. So crazy. Isn't that insane?
That's amazing.
That's really funny. He was determined.
Yes.
He like thought like he several was. Steps ahead. He's like, okay, so I'm going to start this fake podcast. I'm going to scam her into getting on this fake podcast. Then I'm going to scam her into being a host of a different podcast, which is what I wanted all along. This is amazing.
Was it the Rethink Humanity podcast initially, or was that then started afterwards?
So his podcast that he started was Really For Real Again. Okay. And he did, I don't know, like 5 or 6 episodes. And then he said, Lacey, you're great. You're good at this. He's like, you need start a podcast. And if you start a podcast, he's like, I'll do all the technology stuff for you. And I was like,
well,
okay. now you're talking.
That's
right?
A deal.
Because I don't know about that stuff.
How did we not get that deal?
Hey, I feel like I made that offer to you. What are you talking about?
Okay, well, fair. But in my defense, I then decided, well, I'm not going to have you do all of the work. No. I did start like learning how to do some of the technology stuff too.
It's been a good journey for us, but it's funny to hear the story because our story was very similar. We were having all these conversations amongst ourselves and we were like, we just need to start a podcast because we're having these conversations anyway. We might as well put it out there and start then talking to other people that are having similar thoughts and ideas and learn from them. So, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's crazy. I'm curious as to how you came up with the name The Fun Time Podcast.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah, you are actually the first person on camera to ask us this question, which I find really entertaining. I guess I have to answer this question since I am the one who came up with this
is on you.
Name. So when John asked me, like, what should we call our podcast? My first thought was, I want the initials of our podcast to be FTP. Because as the leftist that I am, fuck the fucking police. So
and my reaction to that was, I don't stand behind this message, but I'm willing to make it like a subversive like also, thing that you can know about, but isn't like blatantly out there, because that's not really how I want to represent our brand to the world.
It's also just really funny because when I said FTP, John's first response was file transfer protocol.
Being the nerd that I am, yeah.
That's classic right there.
So we immediately realized, you know, it's like we can get creative with this. We can, you know, have it mean many different things.
And so in my brain, I was like, okay, well, what would be a really good name that would fit FTP? And literally the first thing that came to mind was like fun time program.
Yeah.
And then we looked it up and it happened to be available and we're like, well, shit, this works.
I've had this idea for a podcast going back about as long as I've been excited about UBI and Andrew Yang's ideas. Once I started thinking about, you know, ways that we can change our world. And the first thing that came to my mind was the challenge that arises after UBI becomes the norm. And that challenge to me is, what do people do with their time when you free them from wage slavery? Mm-hmm. And so the question is, you know, how do people find purpose in life if their purpose isn't coming from being forced to go to a 9-to-5 job, being forced to work at McDonald's or mm-hmm. Walmart or whatever it is that as Andrew Yang points out in his book, is normal. That is the normal. Like, we live in this bubble where we think that most people go to college and then they go out and they find a job that really gives them value in their life. But the reality is, the normal state in this country is that people go to a job that they don't like and they're forced into out of, you know, economic necessity. So mm-hmm. when you free people up from that wage slavery, we haven't yet trained people. Our society is not set up to train mm-hmm. people for figuring out what they really want to do with their lives.
Yeah.
Because we're training them to finish high school, hopefully, and then just get, you know, a basic minimum wage job.
Figure out how they can be productive enough to pay their bills.
Exactly. But then, you know, how to create new things.
Right.
You know, how to think about your opportunity, your time in this life is an opportunity to bring new value into the world. And that's really only something that the, you know, children of means have access to even thinking about doing. And if we're able to free more people up to have access to doing that, how do we teach people to do that? How do we inspire people to do that? So my question became, what is the future of purpose for individuals within society? And I initially actually started a podcast with that name, and I was really into the, like, you know, really intense intellectual discussion and interviewing people and thinking about these really deep issues. And what I learned in having conversations with Vivica here is that it can be a little heavy if that's your only focus. And so what I recognized mm-hmm. was that when we were having our conversations, mm-hmm. we could do it in a way that was maybe a little bit more accessible to people who aren't as excited about these ideas as I am. You know what I mean? Because if you're only talking to people that are as excited about these ideas as you are, you're missing out on the normal people who are the people that we really need to be reaching.
Yeah.
And so when we started talking about this name for the program, and also recognizing that we had a lot of other things that we were interested in and wanted to talk about, mm-hmm. you know, we talk about, you know, intense topics like, you know, like UBI and race and culture and other things like that in politics. We also talk about fun stuff like sex and relationships and gender identity and things like this.
That was a great episode. Oh my God.
Yes.
I
love that.
Which one?
The one on BDSM.
Amazing.
Kink. My favorite episode, my personal favorite episode.
And what's been amazing to see is that has been our most watched episode so far. So there's clearly
people
an
like
appetite.
Sex, John.
There's an appetite for lighter, more fun topics. But by doing those topics, we also bring people in for the more intense discussions like UBI and things like that. And so what I recognized in the name is, like, if we can have a name that's a little bit more laid back, a little bit more relaxed, you can kind of bring people into a fun show and then sneak in the more heavy stuff. So it's been really fun having that journey and seeing how that's materialized over the, you know, the course of the, what is it, 5-6 months now we've been doing this?
Four
months? I don't know. August, September, October, November, December, 5 months. Okay. 5 months.
Five.
You know, to see how that opportunity has arisen as a result of having a name that's a little bit more fun and having topics that, you know, span a little bit more of a wider interest. So,
So, John, are you saying it's been fun time.
It's been a
on
fun
this
time.
Program.
Well, you know, it's so funny.
No dad jokes.
I have the worst jokes. I have the worst jokes. I know this.
The best part is we have become our own biggest fans. So we shoot all these episodes and then we sit down and we actually edit them. And we, you know, we do the cameras and everything and we sit there watching them having the same reactions in the editing booth that we had while we were filming. And it's just made it so much more easy to do as a result of that. So yeah, that's the history behind our name.
So I want to say a couple of things here.
Sure.
Number one, the BDSM episode was just so informative. Like, what I loved about it was fun and it was informative. And I think that that's a very taboo issue, which it doesn't need to be.
Right.
Like, sex is just way too taboo when it comes to like talking about it. Right. And I think there's a lot to gain when we do. Mm-hmm. So I love that. I think that one, that was so valuable, and so, like, such kudos to both of you, because it was super well done. Like,
thank you.
Super well done. I'm not surprised that it's had a lot of listens.
Right.
I had way too much fun with that episode. Let's be very real. Like, I was like, oh, I get an excuse to wear one of my latex dresses. Sold. Like, I get to play with, like, some of my toys on camera. Done. But I also, I completely agree that I think that taboo topics, especially like sex and BDSM and kink in general, are taboo only because we have such terrible sex education in this country, and that we are a sexually repressed country. So we have no real outlet to talk about things that everyone wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to talk about sex. Everyone wants to have sex, unless you're asexual. And sometimes that's like iffy here and there. But like, for the most part, like it's something that everyone's going to engage in. It's like saying that like, we shouldn't ever talk about brushing your teeth. Like, people brush their teeth, but it's something that we really just, we just don't talk about it. And I mean, why?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't know that I want to get too far on a tangent here, because there is another point I want to come back to about something you said, John. But I think, like, have you ever, I was thinking, like, if it wasn't for certain outlets or conversations, like, you wouldn't even know people have sex.
Right.
Like, that's how little we talk about it. And that's so stupid, because it's so much a part of being human.
Right.
Like, that's just such a natural thing. And that kind of ties into the podcast a little bit, rethinking humanity. What are we valuing as a society and as humanity? We're not valuing something that's so natural and so human for us. And that's one example of things that we're squelching, we're, you know, quieting, we're making taboo, that are like not ultimately not helping us at the end, you know? And that part to me is just, it's frustrating, and there are definitely countries that are doing better with that. So I like that. But I think that's one of the biggest things for me as a passion point for doing the podcast is like, can we rip that shit apart, please? Because we don't need this. This is not helping.
Well, this is why I was so excited when I came across your podcast and your work is that, you know, I've had the same reaction to getting involved in Andrew Yang's ideas and how he's constantly talking about how we need to think about better ways to organize our society and also just structure how we engage with each other and support each other. And when you start thinking in that capacity, you start thinking about rethinking humanity, you realize how that way of thinking spreads into every facet of your life. And it's like, here we are talking about sex. And do you think Andrew Yang, when he started his campaign, ever thought that one of the influences that he would have is to get people to have a healthier conversation around sex? You know, it's like, but it follows from the philosophy of how do we organize ourselves in a better way? You know, and that's so cool to see other people having that same kind of experience with these ideas. I love that.
Absolutely.
It's a passion I'm realizing of mine. It's like, what are different ways that we can do things as a society that can be healthier for all of us? Like, that is so exciting to me to think of that and to learn about those things. And then, you know, I'll kind of come back to what you said about your original podcast idea about like, what do we do when we have time, we have basic income, and we have time on our hands, and our main purpose is not work.
Right.
And so that, I think, was my very favorite part of Andrew's whole thing, because that's actually where we're going.
Yes.
And for some people, that's going to be very, very hard to break that mindset, because that is what we're culturally trained to do. Yes. I mean, we were talking about it earlier about school and what do people do when they go to school? They just get trained how to get a job, basically. Yes. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. Right.
So I think, and then this ties back to Eric Fromm and then our podcast, and the main tenets of kind of the values of the podcast is, well, we aren't, because we're working so much, because the capitalistic machine dominates everything, there's not an opportunity for us to self-actualize.
Yes.
You know, and so yes. That's really, Eric Fromm said the main task of man is to give birth to himself. Mm. And so when we're too busy working all the time, we don't have time to do that. Like, right. Okay, here's a great example. Me and you, both of you guys, we wouldn't have started a podcast yeah. if it wasn't for the pandemic, right?
Yep.
And so because we had time
yes.
to understand or to try, we realized like we can do this. Mm-hmm. Yes. We did something. We self-actualized in a yes. way, right?
Right. Yes.
So like think about the artists, the singers, the whatever it is
right.
that you are, that you could be very talented at. You don't know until you try. You don't know. It's like dating
right.
and sex. You don't know what you like until you try it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have time to try something, there's no way you can develop into your full self or yeah. Knowing who you are completely. And that's really where the pleasure really comes in life. Pleasure is probably a strong word. Joy comes in life.
Joy.
From what I'm reading
yes.
from.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Joy. That's what we really want.
Yes.
And so we're killing ourselves, dude.
Right.
We're killing ourselves. And I'm not, well, physically too, but mentally, emotionally, we're killing ourselves living like this.
Yeah.
And it's a sad thing. And I want to see us come to a place where it's like, instead of being worried about that question, what are we going to do
yes.
when we know, like when this ultimate outcome comes and we don't have work to define us,
right.
like, what do we get to do?
Yes,
exactly.
When we don't have work to yes. define us. I think it takes time. It's going to take
time. It's
going
to take
time. It's going to look very different for every person.
Right.
Because everybody's different. But that was my like, wow, that
yeah.
is the coolest little nugget in Yang's, you know, platform.
100%. I had the same reaction. And one way I also like to think about it is how many Einsteins have spent their entire life slaving away at McDonald's or Walmart or one of these other places, or ended up in a job like a coal miner, you know, for example, who, you know, his father, grandfather, you know, worked in the coal mines, and all of a sudden those jobs are gone. And you start looking at the manufacturing jobs that have left in certain towns, and you go into these towns and you start to see that what they call diseases of despair, which are through the roof in the past few years compared to what they have been in the past. And Yang's whole theory was that, you know, this is because when you take away people's, you know, means for supporting themselves, they don't just transition into being like, oh, cool, what am I going to now do with my life and be creative and create new value? They die
yeah.
mentally. You know, they turn to drugs, they turn to suicide, and men especially do even worse with this than women, because women, our society has taught women that there are other ways of finding value in their life, you know, whether it's through relationships or through caring for family members and that kind of thing. Whereas men, it's like, you got to get out there and have that job that defines you.
We need to
change our perspective on this. Yeah.
I also think, relation to that, it also has a lot to do with the fact that women have a lot stronger social networks, and they have a lot stronger social safety nets. So where a woman might be able to turn to her friends and say, you know, I'm having a really rough time. Things have been really hard for me. I don't know what to do. Men have a lot of trouble talking about being vulnerable and having harder conversations, even among their male friends. So because they don't have that ability to really say, yeah, I'm really struggling right now. Things are really fucking hard for me right now.
Right.
They internalize that a lot more.
100%.
So I think that also has a lot of contributing factors.
We have so much work to do on that. But just to finish that point, you know, just purely from a selfish perspective, like a societally selfish perspective, how many Einsteins have we missed out on who could have thought of the next breakthrough in physics? We could have faster than light travel, you know, and we don't even know that we're on the cusp of that, because we're only allowing a tiny fraction of our society to grow up thinking about changing the world. And it's only the children of families of means who have those opportunities, and then the rare exceptions of somebody who has a breakthrough as a result of a good schooling system, thank God. But you know, it's all about really getting, as Yang says, getting the economic boot off of people's throats so that they have the opportunity to even think about realizing their potential as individuals, which means as a larger picture, society and humanity realizing its potential as a larger collective of individuals. Yeah, and right. I cannot wait to see that world. And that's what this work is all about, unlocking and unleashing. And we're all going to be living in a better world as a result of it because of the human potential that we are going to bring online that is being wasted right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's so true. It's so true. I think that also I'm seeing that in the differences. I think I mentioned this, but I used to be a teacher. I taught in public school and I'm not a fan of the way that they do things in public school. And so I wonder how many kids have like just their curiosity, their creativity, their like innate ability to learn how to problem solve has just been squished out.
Yes.
By this like rigid structure, one authoritative figure telling you what to do and think instead of, and I mean, the best way for me to compare the two is like the Montessori method where the child is experientially learning.
Right.
There's so much more value that comes out of that. Like, you don't learn something by your dad telling you, hey, guess what? If you touch the stove, it's going to burn your hand.
Nope.
Gotta do it. You learn when you touch the stove.
Gotta do it.
You know what I'm saying?
We have this fight all the time. She's always giving me advice on things. And I'm like, yeah, you're going to have to get used to me just doing it anyway.
Yeah, I'm constantly the dad that's stepping in. It's like, the fire is hot. Don't touch it. And he's like, I'm going to touch it. I'm going to touch it to learn.
Yeah. Funny.
So, yeah. No, and I also think that, like, a lot of this ties back into when you're looking at science fiction and you're looking at like society as a whole, one of the things that is a reoccurring trope that comes up in society is obviously vampires, right? And like, what do vampires do with eternity? And they have like all of this time to read and learn instruments and all this time to be creative and learn languages that they never had the chance to learn as in their short human lifespan. And I think that that desire to have all of that extra time in eternity to learn all of these things would really be circumvented by having the ability to pursue the knowledge and the fascinations and the creativity that you want to pursue because you have this income, this basic ability to pay your bills, to keep a roof over your head, to make sure food is on your table, and to relieve yourself from the stress and the worry of just surviving. And once you get out of survival mode, you get to leisurely stroll into thrive mode.
Yes.
And I think that that's one of the things that makes being a vampire in the like social consciousness so appealing, is that they get the leisure to be in explore mode all the time, and they have unlimited resources so that they can just buy whatever, go wherever, do whatever, learn whatever. And I think that having universal basic income would give that ability to a lot more people.
Yes. I can't wait to see that world. Yeah. So what do you think are the things that we need to be doing, you know, in the short term to be, you know, sort of making these ideas happen faster?
I think we need to keep doing what we're doing, first of all. Like you know, you guys, myself and Sonia, we got to talk about this stuff,
absolutely.
You know, and we've got to, you know, get the word out. I hate to say we have to, because I feel like that just like pushing and pressure.
Right.
But I think, you know, what will help us get there is continuing to have these conversations and push the ideas. And I think it's also what you're doing, like with the kink and the BDSM episode. It's taking those taboo things and breaking the hell out of the taboos.
Yeah.
Because I think that's how we're going to get to a place where we realize like there's this facade that is culture and society of how things are and how things are set up and how things actually go.
Right.
And in reality, like, hey, guess what? We're human beings. We experience loss. We aren't machines. We can't work 80 hours a week and be healthy.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so society says, oh, but all that's fine. But in reality, as human beings, that's just not something that we can withstand without some changes. And so I think we got to keep breaking these taboos. We got to keep getting these ideas out. I think, you know, Andrew's work is so important, and supporting his work is really, really important. And then just being on the lookout for other folks who are doing similar things,
right?
And supporting them, you know, that's kind of what comes to mind. I wonder if you have, you guys have any thoughts, any different thoughts about how we can do that.
That's right on. And when we talk about supporting Andrew and his ideas, what he has made so clear to me, and he's doing such a good job of, is that he is only, I don't want to say the figurehead, but he's the gateway drug into this. You know, supporting him is just the beginning. What we need to do is we need to support the candidates who arise as a result of his ideas and who are supporting UBI and you know, in their local elections. We need to get people elected into Congress who are supportive of these ideas. So it's about spreading the ideas and uplifting other people who are spreading these ideas, but then making sure that we're finding the candidates who arise, who are able to rise to the occasion and get into Congress, but also changing people's minds in Congress, you know, when it comes to senators, when it comes to your local elected officials, talking to them and pushing these ideas in that capacity. But then, of course, really uplifting the voices of people like yourself and you know, other quite a few other amazing YouTubers and speakers like Scott Santons. The work that he's doing is just unbelievable. Anybody who hasn't had a chance to look into Scott and his work, check him out on Twitter, Scott Santons, or at his website, scottsantons.com, I believe. He's just done so much amazing work before even Andrew got into this. I think Andrew's even said a lot of the work that he's been able to do comes as a result of the work that Scott had done previously. So I think you're absolutely right. It's about uplifting those voices, finding those voices, amplifying them, and supporting them. And then just, you know, learning as much as we can individually so that we can be the light bearers in our own local communities, in our own conversations with friends. I can't tell you how many people I've opened up to these ideas as a result of just being excited about them.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
People, they see that excitement and they're like, maybe I need to learn more about this, because, you know, John seems like he's not the dumbest guy on the block, and if he's excited, then maybe there's a reason for it, you know? So that's it, I think. Who have you been excited about working with in this capacity? What are some names that people should check out?
Oh my gosh. I love this question. Yes. Thank you. This is a great question because I get to share some of the authors that I like. So there's a couple people that come to mind. First of all, Sherry Turkle. She's written a couple of books that I think are really important. She was one of the first to talk about some of the themes that you see in The Social Dilemma.
Okay.
Have you guys seen that documentary?
Absolutely, we have.
Of course.
Awesome. Yes. So she did a lot of research. She's an MIT professor, and she did a lot of research over the last, I want to say 20 years. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's about right, about how technology affects humanity and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So the book of hers that I have read is called Reclaiming Conversation.
Okay.
And so she talks about how much technology has affected young people's ability to develop empathy in a negative way. So that's very fascinating and obviously very, very important.
Yeah.
Fingers are crossed. We're working on getting her on the podcast. We're 99% sure that we'll be able to have her on for an interview. So
awesome.
That's exciting.
Can't wait.
That's really exciting.
And then the other person that's like really struck me lately, we talked about him on our last episode, and I plan to do a little more with him and would love to have him on, but I don't know if that's, you know, we'll see. But his name is Dr. Gabor Mate, and he is a physician, a medical doctor, but and does a lot of studies with addiction, but also sees the correlation between stress and physical health. So not just mental health, but our physical health. And so he talks a whole lot about that and just has made some incredible points about, you know, childhood trauma and a lot of our present day issues really relating back to childhood trauma and how to kind of work through those things. So he's a guy that I like highly recommend. YouTube is where you can find him. And he also has a new book coming out. I think it's called Health and Illness in a Insane Society. I think that's what the name of the title, something like that.
Okay.
I'm like, that's right up my alley. And then the last person I'll mention is Helen Russell. She wrote a book called The Year of Living Danishly.
Okay.
And so she talks about living in Denmark, what her experience is like there, and how different their values are there than here, which mm-hmm. I love. And what stood out to me is they're from the UK and had been trying to get pregnant.
Okay.
And spent all this money on, you know, in vitro. Mm-hmm. And like shortly after they moved to Denmark, they got pregnant. Wow. I mean, it was just like easy. And I think it seems to me it's a stress related thing. So
yeah,
there you have it, folks.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's so good.
Yeah. Well, Lacey, this has been such a pleasure getting to catch up with you. You know, we've been following your work from a distance and, you know, loving seeing you on Twitter almost every day. You've always got a good take. You're always, you know, sharing inspiring things and keeping us in touch with how things are going in Georgia, which, you know, we are so excited about how that's going to turn out. We are hoping we get this episode published before that so that we can get more people excited about,
yes,
you know, paying attention to that, yes, election coming out. Yes. So thank you for taking the time and come and talk to us. Where can people find you online?
Where do you want to be found?
Where do I want to be found? I want to be found at Lacey Delane on Instagram and on Twitter. I'm more active on Twitter.
Okay.
And then Rethinking Humanity has an Instagram account too. We've been busy with these runoff races. So that's why it's been like kind of a month since we just put out another episode. It's been a month, but
understandable.
It's at Rethinking Humanity on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then on Twitter, it's at Rethinking Humanity, and Rethinking has no vowels.
Right.
Okay.
So at Rethinking Humanity on Twitter. Awesome. So yeah, follow us there. And thank you guys so much. I had so much fun. We need to do this again in some way.
We are absolutely going to have to do this again.
We would love to. Yeah, we'd love to get you back on to talk about, you know, how your work is continuing. This campaign for, you know, Humanity Forward that Andrew has started and that, you know, you are now involved in so many different ways is going to continue. This is work that is going to continue for the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. So we look forward to touching base with you again and seeing, you know, how that work is continuing for you and what's inspiring you in the next few months or years. So yeah, we will be in touch for sure.
Sounds good. You guys keep up the good work.
You and, as well.
I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Absolutely. Yes. Thanks. You too.
Awesome. Thanks again, Lacey. Hope you have a great week and, you know, good luck with the upcoming election. Let's make it happen. Hey, fun time listeners. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour-long podcast with Lacey Delane. We had such an awesome conversation. It has been now a full week since we shot that episode, and we were about to publish it tonight, but so much has happened in that week. We had the Georgia special election, mm-hmm, went down yesterday. Really exciting results to talk about in that. And of course, we have this nonsense happening in Washington today, and we felt it would be remiss to publish this episode. We were talking about all these things as if they're about to happen, and now they actually have happened. So we've got Lacey back on the Zoom. We're going to touch base. What a freaking crazy 2 days. How are you feeling today, Lacey?
Oh my gosh, it's been a roller coaster.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how's the roller coaster in Georgia been?
I'm telling you. I mean, between, you know, what CNN was saying about the results last night and then what you saw online or what I saw online, there seemed like two totally different reports. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like the folks who were on the ground and reporting on Twitter were just a little ahead of your typical media folks.
Yeah.
Right.
But that was a roller coaster. I've had a really good feeling the whole time. I mentioned that when we talked.
You absolutely did. Yeah.
I feel like I did a good job of staying even keel for the election, I think. But today has been... I don't think I realized how much national traumatic events I could even call it,
mm-hmm,
yep, really played a part on our individual mental health,
mm-hmm,
until this afternoon. Indeed. You know, this morning it's like, whoa, we did it. Oh my gosh, there's so much hope, there's so much potential, there's cash coming, mm-hmm, our way, you know, we could probably bet on that.
Right.
And that's great.
When you say cash, you mean you mean the federal stimulus that is almost guaranteed to be able to pass now that we have both control of both houses.
Exactly. Amazing. And the pledge from each of the candidates and Joe Biden that they would do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to learn a lot about their character based on what happens.
There's no excuses anymore. Can't blame the Republicans. We got to hold them accountable.
Not anymore. But yeah, then this afternoon has been just a shocking thing to see unfold.
Believable.
Sure. You know, it's crazy because I saw a post last night that like very much saw like the preview that this was coming. A flight attendant who was on a flight from Texas to DC, it was full of nothing but Trump supporters. Ooh. And they had this like Trump 2021 like light that they kept flashing after the lights had gone down in the cabin to like project this thing on the screen. Like you could see it in the video and like, well, obviously
we're gonna put that on the screen. That's
yeah, it's fucking crazy. And so like, and there's MAGA hats everywhere, or MAGA hats.
MAGA. I call them maggots.
Yeah. The MAGA crowd. So there was all these red hats, like a sea of fucking red hats on this plane, all headed out to DC. And this was last night.
Yep.
And they were all like Trump 2021, blah, blah, blah. And on the plane. And like the flight attendant literally could not get them to settle down. It got to the point where I think they had to like stop the plane, like dock the plane early or something. Like it was bad. So if that was happening last night and that was just one plane on their way in, I can only imagine how many more planefuls of people went to DC.
I think that we're going to be seeing movies made about this, and we're going to be seeing these stories being told after the fact, because so much of that is happening right now in so many different ways that we can't capture it all. You know, mm-hmm. we simply can't process it all. But yeah. before we jump into today's events, okay. Where do we stand with the special election in Georgia? Is it officially called in the news?
Yes, it has officially been
both
called
seats
as of like maybe 10 or 15 minutes ago. Both seats Amazing. Have officially been called. I've been like, my best friends and I have been like compulsively like refreshing the New York Times updates. Like, okay, so we're at like 97% completion.
Right.
But like, yeah, so we are at, I think, what is it, like 98%? But they mm-hmm. called it at 98% because the rest is just mail-in ballots. And at this point, it would take at least 75% of the right. vote for either of the candidates to win. And they're projected to get less than 50%.
Right. That makes sense.
So, yeah.
So what was that roller coaster like then? When did you kind of feel like it was called for you? Because you talked about how on Twitter, people were a little bit more, I don't want to say rushed, but they were a little bit more confident in the results sooner than mm-hmm. what we were seeing in the mainstream media. What were you seeing?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, again, like I've had a good feeling about this and I don't really know how to describe that other than it was a good feeling.
Right.
And so I just was at peace and I just really felt like we, you know, John Ossoff and, you know, Reverend Warnock were going to win. So I was expecting that to happen mm-hmm. Or kind of, yeah, expecting that to happen. And then as I start to see, it's Dave Wasserman who was tweeting last
yes,
night.
Right. He was the one who was really calling it soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
And confidently.
And I was like, yeah, and very confidently. So that's kind of was my measuring stick, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. And then when Andrew called it through his Twitter account,
right. mm-hmm.
at first I was a little surprised. I was right. like, whoa, it's really early. But I also know the guy and
right.
he's brilliant and he knows, you know, that he has a Twitter account that millions of people
right exactly.
So he's probably he knows what he's saying. I thought, well, he probably knows some numbers you know that we don't know. So mm-hmm. At that point I was like, I'm pretty set. Like, I was a little nervous for a little bit afterwards, but yeah, this morning I was like, okay, this is really a done deal.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like that this morning waking up, which was such a relief, especially after our traumatic experience in November,
where
it just took days and we just didn't know. I had to tune out. Mm-hmm. It was getting unhealthy. I was like, I need to tune out. And by the time I finally tuned out on Friday, and then like Friday night or Saturday is when they finally called it. It's like as soon as I stopped looking, that's when it happened.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So man, today though.
Well, it's actually just really funny. One of my best friends pointed out that down in Georgia, your vote counters are speedy as hell. Like in the general election, y'all got done faster than a lot of other states. So the fact that you're taking so long to count these votes, it's not that mm-hmm. it's taking any longer. It's that the vote counters are clearly being very deliberate to make sure that the Republicans looking over their shoulder can't decry any sort of fraud whatsoever. And it's like, okay,
We confirm? We got this? Okay. That's one.
Right. One. Right. I mean, at the same time, though, I think a big reason for the delay in calling the race is just because of how close it is.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be making a call until correct. You really feel like you can have a confidence in saying that the votes that are still coming in aren't going to be able to swing it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You had people as early as last night saying that, but the mainstream media, I think, was being a little bit more cautious. Also because of you know, the way that the president is treating this and calling fraud and all this nonsense. So you don't want to contribute to that narrative by calling it sooner than people are really comfortable with.
Of course.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely been a big contributing factor, especially like after 2016.
Right. Right. But I think the best thing so far that we've seen is that both candidates have passed the threshold of whatever it is that would trigger an automatic recount. So they're way ahead of where Trump, of where Biden was when Biden won Georgia. And part of the reason why they were able to spend so much time, you know, contesting the results was that it was close enough that they could ask for recounts, which happened and proved that, you know, Biden still won. But in this case, it doesn't look like they're going to be able to do that. So it doesn't seem like this is going to get drawn out any more than it already has. And it feels like we can call it.
Yes. Yeah. Which is great, because I think, you know, there were some folks who were saying and thinking that it might be a few days before we knew. Mm-hmm. I think it's better for our democracy, for all of us. We know sooner than later.
Yes.
Another thing about last night, too, part of the reason I felt confident earlier on is I knew some of the counties that he was talking about that had the results still left to come in.
Right.
And just because I grew up in the state and I live in the city and I'm familiar with these counties, I was like, I'm pretty sure like 99% of those ballots are going to be for John Austin.
So, which is what Dave Wasserman was saying last night on Twitter. Yes. Did I get his name right?
Yes.
Something like that.
I think so.
Yeah.
I hope we're not screwing it up, dude. Sorry if we are.
Sorry.
We'll put it on the screen. Yeah. We'll link his Twitter account.
He got like tons of followers, more followers last night. Yeah. I didn't follow him before, but I was just looking at his tweets and I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think he's up to like 525,000 followers. But hey, he deserves it because he put out some good shit last night, man.
He was on the money.
Really good.
Yeah, mad props for sure. So let's talk about today. What the hell has been going on? I was literally sitting here all day working on getting this episode finished so we could publish it. And people start messaging me. My little brother, he's like, dude, are you looking at what's happening in the Capitol? I had to tune in. It's just like, I don't even know how to process this. What is going on?
Oh,
I have so many things that like I want to say, but like I think that like all the things that are going through my head are like, I feel like I'm just going to be Captain Obvious.
When did you first notice that something was happening? What was that like for you today?
Yes, it was this afternoon. I was at the grocery store and getting stuff to make chili, and a friend of mine was like, "What's going on at the Capitol?" And I was like, I heard there was a protest, but I didn't hear anything else. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I turned on NPR as I was driving that I realized how big of a deal it was. I mean, I really thought it was just people just hanging out outside protesting.
Right.
That's what I thought at first, too. Far. Yeah.
Right. Which is their right to do.
Right.
Which would have been totally fine.
Right. That's far from what happened. Right. That's not.
That's not what happened. Yeah.
I got back to my apartment and just turned on the news. And I just was just blown away with what I saw, you know, people climbing up the wall of, you know, the White House in, people, you know, breaking in, people hanging out in, you know, Pelosi's office, just chilling.
Hanging like out it's on there, the date, you know? I'm going to hang out on the couch. It's fine.
Confederate flags walking through the Capitol.
Fucking insane.
Yeah. And blatantly walking as though they just deserve to be there.
Yep. The entitlement of it. It's the entitlement of it.
And the fact that the Capitol Police weren't ready and able to, who knows if they weren't doing shit, but they weren't equipped to deal with this, which is just totally, totally unacceptable.
I just don't know how they weren't equipped. Like how is it that like when there were Black Lives Matter protests in DC, they were absolutely equipped to handle those protests. And those were earlier this year. So did they just like max out all their tear gas on the protesters in like I mean, it's, BLM?
As far as I can
like,
tell,
I'm
this is
so confused.
This is a real national security problem. The fact that our capital is able to be overrun by this.
But this is also the second time that white supremacists have taken over a federal building in the last 4 years.
Was that in Michigan?
That was, what is it, like Ted Bundy and crew?
I don't know this story. Mm. Ted Bundy.
His first name might not be Ted, but like his last name is definitely Bundy. And he and like five other guys took over a federal building. I want to say this was out in like North Dakota or some shit.
Okay. It's not quite the same as the U.S. Capitol. I mean, this is so far beyond.
Like, but that was the practice run to this.
Fair enough.
That was the lead up to this. Like that told them that like there was no consequences of their actions to taking over an actual federal fucking building being an armed militia.
Okay, well, this was the federal wildlife refuge in
still,
Oregon.
But it's still a federal building.
I get it. And they're still taking over
and they still were armed to the fucking teeth and they held it captive for over a week.
Eamon and Cliven Bundy. Great names.
Wow. See, I was right. Bundy. I was right. I was wrong on the first name, but Bundy Ted was the last name. All right. Anyways, but no.
Close enough, right?
Right. So it's frustrating that like white supremacists took over two different federal buildings in the last four fucking years. And the repercussions of the first time were nothing. They got barely a slap on the wrist for it. And I mean, that's a federal fucking crime. That's supposed to warrant life in federal prison. And instead they just got to, maybe don't do that again. And now you have a huge militia of armed Trump supporters storming the Capitol building in D.C. And the police are just like, oh, guys.
You know what hit me on the way back from the grocery store? I was like, oh my God, if these people were black, they would all be shot right now. Yeah. They'd be killed. There wouldn't be any more of them.
There would be rubber bullets and tear gas everywhere right now.
But more importantly, this would be happening, unfolding in the streets.
Yep.
Because they wouldn't have let them get anywhere near the actual federal building. Nope. There is footage being shared on Twitter of police opening the barricades and letting the protesters in. This wasn't just a matter of the police being overrun.
No,
this
they
is a matter
overrun
of
at
the
all.
Police actually being involved in the protest.
They're helping.
And contributing to it. And as far as I'm concerned, that's pure treason. Like those police officers need to be tried. They need to go to jail because they didn't just allow themselves to be overrun. They contributed.
They contributed to a federal fucking crime of allowing an armed militia to storm a federal building. Like you have like our military, our police force, especially in D.C., they're armed to the police or armed to the teeth and they're militarized. And that is the whole point of defund the police, because the police are so militarized. So somehow they don't have their SWAT and riot gear available to them. They somehow magically don't have all of the like shields and all of the like barricades that they had months before. Those things just disappeared into the ether.
Yeah. Let's talk about what they actually managed to accomplish today. Because obviously the reason that they were, they picked today, it didn't actually have to do with the Georgia election. It had to do with the fact that this was Trump's kind of last stand in his efforts to overturn the election. And he thought that he could stop the certification, not even the certification, it's literally just the ceremonial processing of the Electoral College.
Which usually takes like 7 to 15
It's already
minutes.
Been certified. Everybody's already reviewed it. All the states have already approved their results. Mm-hmm. This is just a ceremony where they come to Washington and Congress basically confirms the results and says, yes,
it's a formality.
It's pure formality. But for some reason, Trump thought that because the vice president, Pence, is the one who oversees this process. He's like, well, just tell Pence not to certify the results and he'd be able to walk away with it, which is just insane, right?
Like, that's not how this works.
But here's the fucked up thing. It's insane, but the problem is he was able to get Republicans in Congress to go along with it and to support this idea. So they've all been perpetuating this. And then on top of that, they've been calling for these protesters to come to Washington to assist in this effort of stopping the certification or the ceremonial process of
which
processing
is an incitement
votes.
To violence and incitement to riot.
These Republicans in Congress contributed to this. Trump contributed to this. These protesters then break into the Capitol and they actually stopped the certification. They actually stopped the ceremony. They were not able to process it as far as I know today.
Not
so they were successful in their efforts. So far they have postponed this last formality of certifying Biden as the president elect. And Normally, I think that people are overreacting when they respond to these things on Twitter and you say, oh, people calling for treason and sedition or whatever. But somebody posted the actual U.S. code for what sedition is. Mm-hmm. And if you read this, I'm just going to read it real quick because it describes exactly what they were doing today. If two or more persons, this is U.S. code 2384, seditious conspiracy. Mm-hmm. If two or more persons in any state or territory or in any place subject to the jurisdiction of the United States conspire to overthrow, put down, or to destroy by force the government of the United States, or to levy war against them, or to oppose by force the authority thereof, or by force to prevent, hinder, or delay the execution of any law of the United States, or by force to seize, take, or possess any property of the United States, mm-hmm. contrary to the authority thereof, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. So I think these people should be charged. And if they're not being charged, this is one of the most, you know, egregious acts of terrorism against our own government by citizens of the government that we just simply can't allow something like this to stand. So, I mean... I don't think people are overreacting.
Dang. No, it's actually interesting because the definition of sedition that you just read actually applies to the Bundy case as well.
Yeah, and they were charged. I don't know if they've been convicted, but they were charged.
They're still free right now.
And one other thing that's nice to hear is Cori Bush, who is, let me just double check. Cori Bush is the congresswoman from Missouri. She is introducing a resolution to the House to expel any Republicans of the House. So in other words, Republican congressmen and women who were accomplices to today's failed coup. So people who were calling for, you know, this whole action to happen and were basically contributing to, you know, getting people to come here and do this. They're actually calling to remove them from the House.
I don't think that's
going to happen. But the fact that they're bringing that to the floor, I think this is good. So hopefully we'll see this play out over the next few days in Congress.
Well, you know, two things come to my mind. One, I think this really speaks to how much we are struggling as a country in so many different ways, but especially with our mental health, that we have this many people who believe that this is okay mm-hmm. and this is the right way to handle the situation. And it's sad. And there's a humongous cognitive dissonance happening here. And I think it's a big red flag to try to help us all see again, that we can, you know, stigmatize mental health. We can ignore it, but it's really at the root of a lot, if not all of our problems.
Yeah.
And we cannot ignore it anymore.
Yeah. Amen.
And part of that is ignore our humanity, which is why we've gotten to where we are right now. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that popped out at me. And the second thing that I want to say is how just appalling it is that the reason this all happened was because Donald Trump incited it.
Yeah.
Right. You've got the man behind the mirror mm-hmm. is the guy who created the chaos on the other side. The guy in the White House is the guy who told all these people basically to do what they're doing.
Not just that, but they said that they weren't going to deploy the National Guard because Trump, who is in charge of the Department of Defense, told them to stand down.
Yep.
So not only do you have these protesters breaking in, but you have the president who called them there actively telling our Department of Defense
stand down
and our federal military organizations to not do anything about it. I mean, I don't know how you can get
That's
a better
coup.
Case for treason.
That is the next point, leads me to the next point, which is this guy's got to be out now.
Yeah.
Like we can't
today.
Like, he can't be our president.
Yeah.
Yes. There's
like,
no,
wait till January 20th. Let's get him out the fuck today.
No, exactly. That guy deserves zero respect.
Yep.
And if I was working at the White House, I believe what I would do, because you never know until you're in the circumstances.
Mm.
But I believe what I would do is if I was supposed to be in some meeting or something with him, I would be like, I'm not going to the damn meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't respect that guy.
He just tried to overthrow our entire country.
Yeah.
Why would we
let
him continue to run or govern the country in any capacity? We already voted to impeach him. The impeachment went through. He just wasn't convicted. And if he had just been convicted of his impeachment, he would have been out of office.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the Senate could still choose to convict him at any
moment.
They'd
have to re-impeach, but yeah.
Right.
The 25th Amendment is in order.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
That Look, I can take vice president to become the president for the next week and a half or whatever. I don't care.
Symbolically, I think that would be great. Technically, it doesn't do a whole lot because between now and then, mm-hmm. he's going to be gone anyway. Right. But symbolically, the fact that he's right. impeached and removed and that we say that we don't stand for this kind of behavior in our country and give Pence yeah. a little bit of credit for standing up to Trump finally, you know, and not going through with this nonsense today. I say reward him with that little, you know, label of getting to be president for a day.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the point is what message are we sending if we just pretend like this didn't happen today right. and he's still going to be the guy who's going to be our president?
Right.
No, no way. Well, no.
That's what I was saying about how the Bundy case was so significant in that, like, it was absolutely sedition, even though, like, it was a federal wildlife building. It wasn't like amazing. It wasn't like this huge big building, but it's still absolutely sedition. And they absolutely should have been tried as traitors.
Yeah.
And the fact that they weren't tried as traitors, like, set the precedent that these people could walk in and say, yeah, well, the president is protecting us. So what, right. like, we're going to get pardoned anyway, if anything happens. So it's fine.
That's actually a great point. The fact that he's been wielding this pardon power to show, if you support me, you can get away with anything.
Yep.
It's nuts.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's nuts. Yeah.
He pardoned yep. Roger Stone.
Oh my God. That who's going to play Roger Stone in the movie? I can't wait. That is going to be such a fun role.
He's
to
literally
play.
A comic book fucking villain.
He's
he dresses like a fucking comic book villain. It's ridiculous.
I literally said that earlier as I was listening to the news and watching the footage. I was like, this is like something out of a fucking movie.
It is.
For real. Like, this is a movie. This cannot be real life. And it's embarrassing, you know, on the world stage.
Yeah.
We are
the whole
this is America.
The whole Trump presidency has been that. And honestly, I mean, I got to say it would have been a little what's the word when something anticlimactic if Trump didn't go out with somewhat of a bang, you know. So there's a part of me that's kind of just like, you know, kind of glad that I shouldn't even say that. I'm not even going to say it. Are you not entertained? That's all I'm saying. We need to do something about this without a doubt. I think the prosecution of Trump and his accomplices, I think it's important for the health of our country going forward. But I also understand that the challenges in doing it, in potentially driving the country further apart. And Andrew Yang has spoken really eloquently about this. And I would really like to reiterate Yang's larger perspective here, because one of the things that enabled him to resonate so well across the aisle in his campaign is that he has from the beginning been talking about how these problems that we're facing, politics has enabled us to kind of be like us versus them. But reality, we're all in this together. We're all facing the same mm-hmm. problems, and that these problems that we're facing are much bigger than the petty squabbles that we're fighting over in Democrats versus Republicans and progressives versus conservatives. We need something like a universal basic income. We need to figure out how to retrain the country to thinking about taking creative control over their local communities and creating the next opportunities for our economy, because otherwise millions of people are going to be out of work and they're going to be on the streets and they're going to have nothing better to do than protest and revolt. And we have foreign countries like Russia and China who are stoking those revolutions and attempting to get us to fight amongst ourselves as much as possible. We need to find a way to look beyond the insanity that we're seeing here in Washington and find a way to rise above the fray and say, how can we help the people in Arkansas, in Missouri, in Texas, in Florida, who feel like they're left out by the system, who feel like our government doesn't care about them, who feel like it is the government and is those evil people in Washington who are the source of their problem, when in reality, it's business. It's mm-hmm. technology that is taking away their opportunity to thrive in their own daily lives. We have to solve these problems so that we can bring these people back into the fold and we can bring the country together and make people feel like Washington cares about them. And it starts with passing this $2,000 stimulus. It starts with actively considering an ongoing stimulus, a universal basic income, where yes. people know that they are citizens of this country and they are going to get a dividend of the incredible growth in economic capital that is happening in the midst of one of the worst years in our country's history in terms of death, in terms of economic despair. What is the GDP doing? What right. is the stock market doing? What are the billionaires doing? They are making money hand over fist while yes. people are in breadlines. People yep. are waiting on their evictions because, yep. oh, we postponed the evictions until after the pandemic, but nobody's paying that rent. So those evictions are still coming down the
pipeline. They're still pending.
How do we bring people back into the fold and make them feel like they are citizens of this country and that they have that they are able to reap the rewards of the economy that is going to continue to grow at the expense of workers being left out? And that's why these ideas are so important. And that's why we need to take stock of where we are today and not just say, look at how awful those people are across the aisle. We should say, why are they suffering so? And how can we help them? And how can we bring them back together so that we are not enemies and we are citizens of the same country going into the future hand in hand, excited about our future, excited about the world that we're leaving for our children, and excited about the new potential that we're bringing online because we are unlocking more of our citizens to being able to consider the problems and finding new solutions because they're not just being slaves to wage slavery. So that's my little rant that I wanted to get in here.
And that's what I was gonna say.
It's going to be a challenge.
That was... That was beautiful. That was the rant, sir.
It was. Andrew was so good at that. Really, really good at that. And that's part of why, as I listened to Joe Biden address the nation today, I was like, oh, God. I mean, I was just feeling the pain and sadness of everything that we're seeing. And I was like, man, I wish that was Andrew because you know, that guy did such a great job of bringing us together and reminding us that we're all the same, that we all want the same thing.
Yeah.
And just helping us to know, like, we don't have to hate each other.
Yes.
It seems like that's the way that, you know, the tone is.
Yeah. Right.
And it's just, it doesn't have to happen that way. We can be compassionate to each other because at the end of the day, you know, when people believe things that aren't true or they have a hard life, you know, just like we each have our individual challenges and our individual pasts that were difficult. We didn't choose those.
Yeah.
Most of the time we didn't choose those. And, you know, that's not something that we have control over. And so we can all find, I think, some compassion for each other and help each other. And after all, that's what our species is really about.
Yeah.
We're about, you know, each other, helping each other. If we were like about competition and hate, we would have been all gone.
Right.
By
exactly.
A long, long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's so true. And, you know, at the end of the day, we share more in common with one another than we do have differences. And the problem is that we're allowing our economic despair and our economic troubles to isolate us and to basically enable people to come in and stoke the flames of, oh, it's those people over there that are causing your problems. It's the minorities that are taking, not minorities, it's the immigrants that are taking away your job. It's those people across the tracks who are just collecting welfare and not contributing anything to the society that's holding things back. And that's why your job sucks. And that's why you don't have job security. That's all nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is economic disparity that is only going to continue to grow as a result of technological disruption. And it's just a fact that's happening. We have to develop a new economy and a new political system that enables the dividends of that economic growth to reach every citizen. And we're going to make it happen.
That's the hope for sure.
I feel very positive about that.
Yeah.
About 2021 being a year that we make even more progress.
Yes.
With basic income than we did in 2020. And I don't think anybody in that imagined that we, when we started the campaign, that it would be like seriously on people's lips
front
instead
and center.
Of laughing at us.
Front and center,
right. Crazy.
Top freaking priority.
Yeah. And now that we have control of all three branches of government, there's no reason why we can't pass UBA.
We're doing it. We are doing it. And I couldn't be more happy and excited to be a part of this movement at this point and thankful to people like Scott Santons, Andrew Yang, people like yourself who took up that standard, that mantle, that whatever it is, the flag that you carry in battle. I'm not very good with battle metaphors. That took it up early and enabled the country to be able to take advantage of these ideas when it needed them most. Mm-hmm. Because when it didn't know it needed them yet, it ridiculed them. And that's natural.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden a pandemic and a crazy presidency later and we're ready to really consider these ideas earlier than we would have been otherwise.
Right.
So we are so indebted to people like yourself and to the Yang campaign and the Santons of the world who made that possible. So Lacey, thank you again for taking the time to share your wisdom and your experience with us. And
we are so happy we got to get back on here and just like decompress about this like incredible roller coaster of a day with you, especially knowing like from the ground what it feels like to be in Georgia and like hear like how it feels down on the ground. You guys are new. You guys were already about it. The rest of the world was looking at you like, you sure though?
What's happening?
You guys made it happen.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Thank you. I really appreciate your words. And I feel very honored that I am fortunate to be to have been a part of what happened. So thank you. And again, I love y'all's show. I love what you're doing. Keep it up. And I'm here. I'll come on anytime.
So absolutely.
And maybe we'll have you guys on.
Right back at you. We would love that. Yeah. Let's continue doing this. Let's keep the conversation going and let's keep pushing these ideas.
Yeah.
2021 is going to be a good year. Awesome. Thank you so much, Lacey.
Have a wonderful rest of your evening.
You too. Thank you so much. Hang in there. This is crazy, but it's going to get better.
I know.
It always gets worse before it gets
Amen.
So, darkest before the dawn.
Amen. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Lacey. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks for checking out this clip from our show.
To watch more clips or full episodes, click on our profile below.
If you want to stay up to date on all of our new episodes and videos, click subscribe.
And if you have any ideas for future guests or topics that you would like to see us cover on the show,
leave us a message in the comments or connect with us on any of our social media channels at Funtime Program.
Or on our website at funtimeprogram.com.
We'll see you in the next one.
Bye-bye.